I'm Suzanne LeGrand, talking today to Jennifer Egan, national best-selling author and the 2011 Pulitzer Prize winner for fiction. What made you want to become a writer?
Well, I didn't want to be a writer as a kid. I was kind of a science-y kid. I wanted to be a doctor and then later an archaeologist. I guess I was already moving toward writing in a way with that transition because it was, you know, I think the thought of being a doctor was about the mystery of the body. And I loved, honestly, the thought of cutting people open and just seeing what was going on in there. Well, you know, in a certain way, that's a good analogy for writing, minus the blood and the power tools. So, but I had kind of a revelation about writing when I was 18. I took a year off between high school and college, and I saved up money working in a cafe, and I went to Europe with a backpack. And I was from California, so very far from Europe. It's a long way to go, huge time change. And again, technology, you know, no cell phones, no internet, you know, very hard to communicate with my parents. So during that time of huge isolation, which lasted maybe 2.5 months, but it felt like a really long time, I somehow realized how important writing was to me. It was a hard trip, but I wrote in my journal constantly, and I think I somehow became aware of something that had always been true, but I just hadn't known it, which was that writing was what organized the world for me and gave it meaning.
So from that point, how did you learn how to write fiction?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, I didn't get an MFA, which a lot of people do. I wrote in college, but I wasn't really studying writing. But I did, you know, I took a couple of workshops, and I worked with a playwright named Romulus Linney, who was a wonderful mentor for me in fiction. I think I really learned by trial and error. And I guess the big question with fiction writing is, because everyone starts out writing in a pretty familiar way. You know, we're just essentially echoing things that we've read. And the question is, when and how do you start moving beyond that into something that's really distinct? It's a hard question to answer. I don't really know how and when I started doing that. I think I was kind of a late bloomer. I was not a star, you know, really ever as a younger person. I think my work was pretty familiar early on and remained so for a while. But I guess, you know, I think in some way the key is always to find a way to both recognize one's process, which is so different for every person. No one can tell you how to do it. You know, for me, it's recognizing that I write by hand and just, you know, accepting that instead of trying to fight it. And also in some way learning to trust one's instincts and figure out how to know a good idea from a dull one. I feel like I feel it almost viscerally. I feel sort of worn out at the thought of writing a story that feels familiar. And I assume that what is interesting and exciting and curious to me will be for readers. But there's something deeply mysterious about the process and that I think is hard for any of us to explain.
You have lately and experienced quite a bit of critical recognition. I'm wondering if at any point you experienced setback.
Yeah, I mean, I for every step forward, it feels like there was a half step backward. So for example, I sold my first story to The New Yorker I published my first story in The New Yorker. I was 26. So you would think, oh my God. And it was great. I mean, it really reassured my father, who I think had grave doubts about what on earth I was doing with my life, because I was basically doing menial jobs, living in New York, and then, you know, telling him I'm writing. Well, what parent wants to hear that? You know, he was a cop's son. He had pulled himself up by the bootstraps to be a lawyer, and he was not digging this I'm writing stuff. So it was useful for that kind of legitimacy, but what it actually led to was a bunch of agents contacting me because they'd never heard of me, and there I had a story. But in fact, the story was much better than anything else I had written. So when I showed people the other work that I had, they were disappointed. And I really absorbed that disappointment, and I thought, oh my God, you know, I'll never top this. It really hung over me for a long time. The first novel that I wrote, which was actually before this, was an absolute disaster. I moved to New York and I started sending it around, and anyone I sent it to became unreachable. they no one knew what to say. They just hid from me. You couldn't get away with that now. But again, this was pre-cell phone. When I finished my first novel finally and sold it, my agent had a huge auction and hoped that lots of people would bid, sent it to, I don't know, 16 or 17 publishers. Every single one of them rejected it except for one. One person wanted it. And but for the 6 weeks before that auction, every day there would be another, you know, this is, sorry, this isn't for us. So I was really scared and felt that the book was really maybe terrible. I was so lucky to sell it and, you know, ended up doing a lot more work on it. But, you know, so I guess each one of those, you know, in the moment seemed like huge setbacks. Looking back, I can say, look, you were moving forward. It's a bumpy road, you know, just keep going. That's what I would say to anyone in that position. But it always felt to me like I was kind of fighting to stay afloat, honestly.
So what enabled you to keep going?
That is a big question to me as well, because I had this conviction that I wanted to be a writer, but I didn't have confidence that I was any good. I never have that much confidence. I think, you know, I always doubt that I can pull off whatever I'm doing, and that seems to work for me. I'm not sure I want that to change. I think it makes me try even harder, maybe. But the period that I really wonder about was when I first moved to New York, because I had no family there, no support systems. I'd been living in England for 2 years, so my friends had all, you know, been 2 years in their jobs after college, and they had lives, and I really didn't. I was temping, and I had that sort of desperate, clingy quality that no one wants to deal with in a person. And, you know, I had this novel that I hoped was really good and learned that it was just a complete disaster. I wonder what kept me going for those couple of years. You know, was it a conviction that I was good? No, because not only was I not a confident type, but I actually wasn't good. I mean, my writing was terrible at that point. There's a certain dogged aspect to my personality that is really, you know, a strong side of me. Like, I really, really don't give up, possibly to a fault. And the deeper in the hole I am, the more determined I get to dig myself out. I guess maybe my thinking was, to the extent that I was even thinking, because mostly I was just frazzled and trying to figure out how to make money and support myself in New York, I think I was thinking, you know, if I'm going to quit, I'm not quitting like this. I'm going to get to a better position and then I'll decide what to do. But I'm not going to just, you know, fall apart here. So I just kept going.
How do you get perspective on your own work?
Well, after my experience of writing this book in England that everyone hated and which no one had seen any of, I was determined never to be in that position again. So I am part of a writing group, and I rely on them very heavily. We only read aloud, interestingly. We don't look at anything on a page. You know, everyone works, everyone's busy. The minute you have homework, it turns into a different kind of thing. So we just have the experience sitting all together. We read our work aloud to each other. We bring in work that's really raw. And when I bring in work in that state, my only question really is just, is this alive or not? Because sometimes I really don't know. And often I know just by the feeling of reading it to them and kind of feeling the energy in the room. It's different from reading it alone to myself. I also bring in more finished work where I know that I'm kind of on the right track. Maybe I've brought it in before, but there's this or that that doesn't feel quite right. And I want some attention to those, you know, to those details, bringing it all up a notch. But basically, you know, I need outside perspective. I don't trust myself to know. Often the fact that I'm having fun is a good sign, but sometimes I go really awry. You know, I'll bring in something, I think they're going to love it. I'm waiting to blow them out of their chairs, and I can just feel it sinking as I read. And then sometimes I come in really quaking in my boots, thinking, oh, this is going to be terrible, and it's really alive. And I think reading aloud is also great because, you know, storytelling did begin as an oral tradition, and the actual sounds and rhythm of the language are a very important part of what makes a piece of fiction work.
How do you find readers that you can trust to give you that feedback?
That's tricky. Do you want people who are essentially on your side? It's dangerous to let someone who isn't really deeply into your writing life, but you really want people who are going to give you the honest scoop, because just hearing I love it is no help. You're going to find out eventually whether it works or not. You might as well find out in time to actually fix it. I think that even criticism that's not helpful and even criticism that's mean-spirited, which is the last thing anyone wants, I don't think it can really hurt us that badly. I think there's a danger of being a little too precious about ourselves and our work. And I basically feel like, you know, if it's strong and you're strong about it, you will feel what you should listen to and what you should ignore. And even within our writing group, you know, we're not always right. We don't always agree. There will sometimes be big debates within the group about whether something is working or not. That's okay. It's up to the writer. I think our own instincts tell us what we should listen to and what not.
One last question. What do you think you've learned about writing since you began writing a diary in Europe?
I think that the fundamental thing is really to entertain the reader. I mean, I feel like for all of the ambition and the goal I have of infusing my writing with ideas and having a strong girding of, you know, intellectual inquiry, you know, in the end, I write as a kind of escapism and I read as a kind of escapism. And I feel like I think I'm more aware of that than I ever was as my work starts to become more challenging formally, maybe. I mean, I've got a chapter of this book that's in PowerPoint, but it's interesting because a number of people have said to me the PowerPoint chapter is the one that makes them cry. The thing that was so great about PowerPoint is that it's so cold and so corporate that it let me tell a story that is very sweet and simple that would have been too sentimental if I had tried to write it as a conventional story. I can't even imagine. Not enough happens. It would have been impossible. But this difficult, sort of structurally girded, cold corporate envelope let me slip in this very sweet story. And, you know, in the end, that's always the goal, is just to find a way to render up our experience in a way that's meaningful and honestly fun. I mean, the great books are fun. It should all be fun. I'm a huge believer in that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Today I've been talking to author Jennifer Egan, winner of the 2011 Pulitzer Prize for Fiction, for her book, A Visit from the Goon Squad.
I'm your host, Suzanne LeGrand, and this has been Writers on Craft, a show about writing and the creative process, produced by KVU Community Radio, 90.7 FM. For program notes or to listen to a podcast of this show, go to kvu.fm online or visit our website at www.writersoncraft.com.